Okay, so tonight we're in Exodus chapter 18. Lord willing, we will work our way through the entire chapter. Tonight we're coming out of Exodus 17 and the episode where the Israelites were attacked by the Amalekites. And then because Moses went up on top of the hill and held his hands up with the help of his brother Aaron and another man named Hur, they were able to defeat the Amalekites. And so now we're going to see the episode where Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes to visit. So picking up in chapter 18, verse 1. Now Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. And Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took Moses' wife Zipporah after he had sent her away, and her two sons, of whom one was named Gershom, for he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. And the other was named Eliezer, for he said, the God of my father was my help and delivered me from the sword of Pharaoh. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, came with his sons and his wife to Moses in the wilderness where he was camped at the Mount of God. And he sent word to Moses, I, your father-in-law Jethro, am coming to you with your wife and her two sons with her. Then Moses went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him. And they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. And Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had befallen them on the journey, and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel in delivering them from the hand of the Egyptians. So Jethro said, Blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, and who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. And it came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until the evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, What is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand about you from morning until evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor, and make known the statutes of God and his laws. Let's stop there for a second. So, reading this text out loud is actually helpful sometimes, because what happens is certain words ring in your ears. And so one of the things that should be ringing in our ears, which is very interesting, is that repeatedly Jethro is referred to as what? Huh?
Father.
Yeah, Moses' father-in-law. So verse 1, verse 2, verse 5, right? Verse 6, verse 7, verse 8, right? Moses' father-in-law, right? And so it is very interesting here that Jethro's relationship to Moses is repeated over and over and over again. So just, you know, and some commentators would say this is making sure that the main person in the narrative remains Moses, not Jethro, right? And he's always identified as Moses' father-in-law. So he comes now, and he comes because in verse 1 we see that he heard of all that God had done for Moses and for Israel, his people, how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. And so this idea of hearing is very interesting. So apparently, somehow word had gotten up to the Midianites about this great deliverance, right? And in fact, this is the kind of the first time we see it, but there's a much more famous story at the beginning of Joshua, if you remember, as the Israelites are headed west across the Jordan River to Jericho, and they send two spies into Jericho, and they meet the prostitute Rahab, right? And the reason why Rahab is willing to go with the Israelites is because she and all of the Jerichoites had heard of what God had done, right? So we don't necessarily know how this word spread through the Sinai Peninsula and even into the land of Canaan, but the fact that God had delivered Israel, and not just delivered Israel out of Egypt, but also basically completely destroyed Pharaoh and his entire army. Apparently, somehow, some way, this word spread. It was ironic that the Amalekites came upon the Israelites. Apparently, they hadn't heard. Right? So anyway, so Jethro is heard. And so he comes to meet Moses. He brings Moses' wife Zipporah after he had sent her away. Verse 2. So, if you remember the previous time that we saw Zipporah, we were in Exodus chapter 4. And quite frankly, it was not a real good and positive scene in the life of the marriage of Moses. In Exodus chapter 4. Beginning in verse 24. Now it came about at the lodging place on the way. So this is the way south, right? Out of Midian into Egypt. Moses is on his way back to confront Pharaoh. And now it came about at the lodging place on the way that the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. And at that time, you know, it could be Moses. It could be maybe one of Moses' children. We'll see. You know, we don't know necessarily from the context. We think it's Moses. Verse 25, then Zipporah took a flint and cut off her son's foreskin and threw it at Moses' feet. And she said, "You are indeed a bridegroom of blood to me." So God let him alone. At that time, she said, "You are a bridegroom of blood because of the circumcision." And that's all basically we know about that particular story. And then sometime between that particular episode and the episode here in Exodus 18, Zipporah had gone away from Moses. We don't know when. We don't know if it was directly in response to this particular confrontation, or if it was later. It could have. Perhaps Moses might have sent her away back to her father as he was headed back to Egypt because he feared for her, and the sons that she had borne him, right? He had no idea how Pharaoh in Egypt was going to respond. And so, of course, she might have been with him through that entire ordeal, through the Red Sea, and maybe she recently went back to her father. We don't know. But in either case, she had gone back with her two sons, born to Moses, and now she's on her way back to meet Moses with Jethro, her father, Moses' father-in-law. And so in verse 3, we see the two sons. Their names are Gershom, and then in verse 4, Eliezer. And so Gershom is the Hebrew word that sounds like sojourner, right? And so Moses had named his first son Gershom because at that time he was a sojourner in the land of Midian. And then in verse 4, Eliezer sounds like the Hebrew word for Yahweh helps. The God of my father was my help. Yahweh helps, or God helps. And so this is also a reminder to Moses of how God had delivered him ultimately from the hand of Pharaoh. So, verse 5, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, comes with his sons and his wife in the wilderness where he was camped at the Mount of God. And so, as you remember, we're headed southeast through the Sinai Peninsula. The last episode was at Rephidim in Exodus chapter 17. So somewhere between Rephidim and the Mount of God, which is Mount Horeb, this is where Jethro comes to meet Moses. And so we're getting up to the point where the Mountain of God is going to become very important as it burns and thunders and all that sort of thing, as the covenant document is made between God and Israel. So in verse 6, Jethro sends word to Moses and tells him that he's coming. So he sends a contingent ahead of him. And Moses, and this is most likely an opportunity for Moses to do exactly what he was doing in verse 7. This is very interesting. So Moses went out to meet his father-in-law and he bowed down and kissed him. And so it's most likely that Jethro sent the contingent ahead to give Moses, his son-in-law, an opportunity to pay homage to him. Literally, that word for bow down is the word that is often translated in the Old Testament as worshiped him, right? So he gets down on his face. So he runs out to meet him as an act of respect. He gets down on his face. He lays prostrate before his father-in-law as a sign of respect for someone who was his elder. Right, and then and kissed him, right, as a sign of his happiness to see him. So apparently Moses and Jethro had a very good relationship. All right, and so he pays homage to his father-in-law. So remember, Moses is the one called by God to be the deliverer of the Israelites. He's the one who was at the burning bush, and he had this miraculous staff that he carried around with him, right? So he's this great man of God. We see that throughout the entirety of the Bible. And yet, he was willing to show respect and pay homage to his elders. Okay? Very important. Verse 8, Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptian for Israel's sake, all the hardship that had befallen them on the journey and how the Lord had delivered them. Right? So very much Moses' message to his father-in-law Jethro is a very God-focused message. All right. It's abundantly clear here that Moses didn't tell Jethro of all that Moses had done, but it was about all that the Lord had done on their behalf and for their sake. Verse 9, very important. And Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel. Now, why is this important? Well, it's important because it's in direct contrast to what? It's in direct contrast to the Israelites complaining. Right? Jethro is not an Israelite. He personally had not been delivered out of Egyptian slavery. And yet, he rejoices, right, and puts the Israelites to shame, quite frankly. I mean, if you remember, it hasn't been more than a couple of chapters since the last time Moses was upset with the Israelites, the very people that he delivered out of Egyptian bondage for their complaining and their murmuring and their grumbling. All right? And so, once again, we see the hard-headedness and even hard-heartedness of the Israelites here in the contrast of Jethro rejoicing. All right, so Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness which the Lord had done to Israel in delivering them from the hand of the Egyptians. Verse 10, so Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord," and that's Yahweh, "who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, and who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians." Verse 11, "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods." Now I know, right, that the Lord is greater than all the gods. This idea of knowing who God is, we have seen it before, right? We've seen it before just in Exodus, right? Moses tells Pharaoh, if you remember, that he should let Yahweh's people go. And Pharaoh's response is, "Who's this Yahweh guy? I don't even know who this character is," right? And God says, "I'm going to make you know me," right? And then in Exodus chapter 9, verse 16, "For this very reason I have raised up Pharaoh, so that the Egyptians would know that I am the God, I am the Lord," right? So this theme of knowing Yahweh, right, has already been prevalent in Exodus, and here we see it again coming from the lips of Jethro, right? One of my favorite books of the Old Testament is Exodus, because this is where God clearly, to Moses and the rest of the Israelites, makes himself known to them. We saw that in Exodus chapter 3, right, where God reveals his name. Yahweh means "I am who I am," and that's the first time that anybody actually knew God's name. Right? And so this continuing and ongoing revelation of exactly who God is, so that people would know him. And we see that theme again and again. "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people. Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took a burnt offering and sacrifices for God. And Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God." So, this is also, there's a kernel of the gospel in here. The gospel of grace, right? Because Jethro is not an Israelite. And yet, verse 9, he rejoices in the deliverance that Yahweh provides. Verse 10, "Blessed be the Lord." He blesses Yahweh, right? And verse 11, he makes this great profession of faith. "Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods." So he's rejecting the gods that perhaps he was a priest of, right? Remember, he's priest of Midian. Right? But because Moses tells him of this great deliverance out of Egypt, Now Jethro declares him to be the greatest of all the gods. And then in verse 12, he offers a burnt offering and sacrifices to this God who had delivered his son-in-law and his people out of Egyptian slavery. Right? And so in this we have this kernel of the gospel going to the Gentiles. All right? And it is just a kernel because there will be hundreds of years between this time, 1500 years actually, between this time of Moses and the arrival of Jesus, the Son of God. Right? So just a kernel of the gospel. But it is amazing. And of course this is before the Book of the Covenant and all the Levitical laws as well. And so it was just very common practice for people, especially priests. Remember, Jethro is the priest of Midian. He's probably accustomed to making sacrifices, and just so it's the right thing to do to offer a sacrifice here to the God who is the greatest of all the gods. Aaron comes also, obviously, to meet Moses' father-in-law, Jethro, and he comes with all the elders of Israel. And so the first time we saw the elders of Israel was way back in Genesis 3:16, right after the God tells Moses his name, which is Exodus 3:14. And then God tells Moses, "Go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, Yahweh, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to me saying, I am indeed concerned about you and what has been done to you in Egypt." So elders in this particular case just means literally the oldest among the Israelites. This is not necessarily the same group of people that we're about to discuss in the second half of the chapter, right? But it's basically the oldest among the tribes of Israel. So they come, and this is very interesting in verse 12. Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before God. So, is that what your translation say? Does your translation say meal?
Yours says bread.
Yours says bread. It is in fact bread. It is literally bread. What kind of bread?
Manna.
It's manna. It's manna. And this is significant. Because again, the kernel of the gospel going to the Gentiles, you now have Jethro, a Gentile, eating manna from heaven. Okay? God rained down manna in the wilderness for his people Israel. But Jethro's invited to a familial feast with manna from heaven. All right. So again, even in Exodus chapter 18, we see this gospel going to the Gentiles, the good news of God's salvation from slavery going to the Gentiles. And they ate this bread with Moses' father-in-law before God. Right. So there, we earlier had seen that they were at the mount of God. Right. And so before God here most likely simply means an acknowledgement that God is in their midst. Right? God is the one leading them around the wilderness. He's leading them as by pillar of fire by day, cloud of smoke by night. They have this familial feast, manna from heaven, in front of God. All right, very, very significant. And just a tremendous privilege for someone like Jethro, right, who's not even an Israelite, to be able to eat this feast before God. Verse 13, it came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from the morning until evening. Now, this is a very ironic verse. Okay? Why is it ironic? Well, if you'll turn back with me to Exodus chapter 2, beginning in verse 11. Now it came about in those days when Moses had grown up that he went out to his brethren and looked on their hard labors. And he saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his brethren. So he looked this way and that. And when he saw there was no one around, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. And he went out the next day. And behold, two Hebrews were fighting with each other. And he said to the offender, "Why are you striking your companion?" Verse 14. But he, the Hebrew, said, "Who made you a prince or a judge over us? Are you intending to kill me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and said, "Surely the matter has become known." So, that word for judge in Exodus chapter 2, verse 14 is exactly the same word that's used here in Exodus 18:13 for judge. Okay? So, earlier in the narrative, there's this rhetorical question asked by one of the Hebrews, who made you a judge over us? Now, after all of the Exodus transpires, what's the answer to that question? God made Moses a judge over them. Right? And now they're submitting to his judgments. And in fact, they're submitting to his judgments in such a radical way that the people stood about Moses from the morning until the evening. So now Moses clearly playing the role of judge among the Israelites. Right? And what we see here, right, is one of the main themes of Exodus, which we talked about at the beginning, is Moses as a type of Jesus. Right? Moses acting as judge, Exodus chapter 18, Jesus ultimately the judge. And we'll see more of that as we move through. Okay? So verse 14, Moses' father-in-law saw that all that Moses was doing for the people, and he said, what is this thing you are doing? Right? So Jethro questions, like he's watching this, and he's trying to figure out what's going on. Right? And it's most likely that he realizes that Moses is exhausted. Right? I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, it's a mess, most likely. There's a whole bunch of people standing around, right? You know how it goes, right? You think they're all queued up in a straight line? Probably not, right? And so Jethro is watching this, and he's asking Moses, what are you doing? And so Moses says to his father-in-law, verse 15, because the people come to me to inquire of God, when they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor and make known the statutes of God and his law. So remember, this is before the law was given, right? Which will come to us in Exodus 20, 21, 22, and 23, and then subsequently in the book of Leviticus, all these laws will come. We're before that. So people have these questions. Right? And people say, well, there's so many laws. I mean, there's four chapters in Exodus and the entire book of Leviticus, all these laws. Why do we need all these laws? Well, because people have questions. People have questions. Moses, what should I do if I find my enemy's, you know, sheep walking through my yard? Right? Well, God has a law for that. Right? How should we deal with that? And they don't know. Remember, they've been enslaved in Egypt for more than two centuries. They have not been a nation by themselves. They're only a few months removed from that, coming through the Red Sea. These people have not had their own set of laws. They don't know how to deal with this, and so they go to the only person that they know who knows how to deal with this stuff. They go to Moses. All right? And so, for the nation Israel, all of those laws, later in Exodus and in Leviticus, are going to be very important to them as they govern their way of life as a new nation. A nation of people who have been brought out of slavery and who are being taken into their own land. They got to know how to run stuff. Okay? That's just the facts, right? They're a nation of laws. They're going to become a nation of laws. This is before the law is given, so they have to go to Moses. All right? And so, Moses is very clear that he's making known, verse 16, the statutes of God and his laws for the people who have very pragmatic questions. All right? Verse 17. And Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing that you are doing is not good. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me. I shall give you counsel, and God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them the statutes and the laws, and make known to them the way in which you are to walk and the work they are to do. Furthermore, and this is where the guidance comes in most clearly, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And let them judge the people at all times. And let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing, and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace. So Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And Moses chose able men out of all Israel and made them heads over the people, leaders of thousands, of hundreds, of fifties, and of tens. And they judged the people at all times. The difficult dispute they would bring to Moses, but every minor dispute they themselves would judge. Then Moses bade his father-in-law farewell, and he went his way into his own land. So, this is Jethro's solution as he's watching Moses take care of all these people. If you want to see more about this, you can look in Numbers chapter 11, beginning in verse 16. I think most significantly, though, if you will fast forward with me to Deuteronomy chapter 1, because there's some discussion in the literature about whether or not Jethro gave wise counsel. The overwhelming amount of the commentaries say that this is wise counsel. Okay, this is wise counsel. But in Deuteronomy chapter 1, Moses is speaking to this new generation of Israelites after all of the previous generation had fallen in the wilderness. That's called foreshadowing, in case you didn't know how the story ended. Okay, Deuteronomy chapter 1, verse 9. Moses is speaking, "And I spoke to you at that time, saying, I am not able to bear the burden of you alone. The Lord your God has multiplied you. And behold, you are this day as the stars of heaven for multitude. May the Lord, the God of your fathers, increase you a thousandfold more than you are, and bless you, just as he has promised you. How can I alone bear the load and burden of you and your strife? Choose wise and discerning and experienced men from your tribes, and I will appoint them as your heads. And you answered me and said, the thing which you have said to do is good. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and I appointed them heads over you, leaders of thousands and of hundreds, of fifties and of tens, and officers for your tribes. Then I charged your judges, verse 16, at that time, saying, hear the cases between your fellow countrymen, and judge righteously between a man and his fellow countrymen, or the alien who is with you. You shall not show partiality, and so on and so forth. So, I think that the overwhelming majority of the commentators are correct on this issue. I believe that Jethro gives wise counsel and counsel that was approved of by God. And you can see that, right? Verse 19, Jethro says, we're back in Exodus 18 now. Now listen to me, Jethro says to Moses, I shall give you counsel and God be with you. And this is basically a blessing, right? As long as if God blesses this, and then later he says, verse 23, if you do this thing, and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, right? And so Jethro is giving wise counsel, and also telling Moses, and, you know, ask God, is this okay? Is this the right thing to do? And here's why I think this is good and wise counsel, and it is given the stamp of approval by God. Because in verse 24, it's very clear, Moses listened to his father-in-law. Right? So Moses is not attributed, there's not a mistake attributed to Moses here. In verse 25 and 26, this is almost verbatim repeat of the counsel that Jethro had given earlier in verses 21 and 22. Right? So the fact that it's repeated almost verbatim gives a sense of, yes, this was the right thing to do, because that repeating, remember, in the Jewish idiom is an emphasis. Right? And then in Deuteronomy 1, Moses looks back on this particular event and he tells the Israelites at that time what happened. And there's no sense of, and I blew it. Right? He's telling them what happened and he's telling them, this is how you should move forward. Okay? And so I think this is clearly wise counsel with the stamp of approval from God. If I go back to verse 17 of Exodus 18, and Moses' father-in-law said to him, the thing you are doing is not good. This is a very interesting way to put it. If you remember all the way back in Genesis 2, right? In Genesis 1, right? There was evening and morning. The Lord saw what he was doing was very good. And then in Genesis 2, Adam was alone. It was not good, right? And in that sense, it wasn't necessarily that all of a sudden this great universe had been good, 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 very good, and now not good. It was, there was a sense of incompletion, right? Incompletion. And this is the same sense that we see here in Exodus chapter 18. It's not that Moses ought not be acting as judge, but it's not good in the sense that it's not exactly how it should be executed, right? And that's the argument that Jethro is making here. And he says in verse 18, you will surely wear out. The task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. And so this is very interesting, because I mentioned previously back up in verse 13 that Moses acting as judge of the Israelites is a picture of Jesus as judge. Okay? So that is the similarity between Moses and Jesus. Here in verse 18, it's a comparison between Jesus and Moses, but it's one of contrast. Right? Moses is a mere man. Right? This burden is too heavy for him. He will surely wear out. He cannot do it alone. And the contrast with Jesus as judge is that, no, Jesus did it alone, and he does it alone, and he will do it alone at the end of days. All right? And so we have the similarities and the contrast between Moses and Jesus as judge. So his counsel begins, Jethro's counsel begins in verse 19, as we already saw. Right? And he says, what you're doing is okay. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then teach them the statutes and the laws, which is actually what's about to happen in Exodus 20 and following. Right? Make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. But now is where the counsel begins, verse 21. You shall select out of all the people able men, right? And now they have three very specific traits that Jethro is laying out, right? And we all at this table would agree these are good, positive, righteous traits, right? What are the three traits? So able men, number one, who fear God. Number two, men of truth. And number three, those who hate dishonest gain. Right? And if these are the types of men that even our culture would put into authority, we'd be a lot better off, okay? Right? Three very, very important traits as Jethro provides this counsel. And so he places them as leaders over the thousands of hundreds, fifties, and of tens. Verse 22, let them judge the people at all times. Let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every minor dispute they themselves will judge, so it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. Verse 23, if you do this thing and God so commands you, then you will be able to endure, and all these people also will go to their place in peace. I think this means that when people come to have a dispute settled, and the dispute gets settled by able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain, they will go back to their tents, they will go back to their place, and then you'll have peace in the camp. Okay? That's what I think this means. Verse 24, as I mentioned previously, Moses listened to his father-in-law and did all that he had said. And he chooses, as I mentioned, 25 and 26, almost a verbatim repeat of the counsel that Jethro had provided. All right? And then finally, in verse 27, then Moses bade his father-in-law farewell, and he went his way into his own land. It certainly seems like Zipporah did not return with him, so we're assuming that Zipporah stays now with Moses and his two sons. And so at this point, if you would just, as we see Jethro later coming along, so if you go with me to Judges real fast, Judges, Joshua, Judges, Deuteronomy, Joshua, Judges, chapter 1. Judges chapter 1. So now we're past Joshua. Joshua's dead, and now we're into the beginning of the time of the judges, when God is commanding the Israelites to go through the rest of the land of Canaan and to make war on the Canaanites there. And specifically, Judges chapter 1, verse 16. And the descendants of the Kenite, Moses' father-in-law, went up from the city of Palms with the sons of Judah to the wilderness of Judah, which is in the south of Arad, and they went and lived with the people. So we see here in Judges that God continues to bless Jethro and his descendants by not obliterating them, right? So they're from Midian, so they're from south of Canaan, and so God allows them to live in the land with the Judahites. And then if you go to 1 Samuel, which is a little bit later on, 1 Samuel 15:6. 1 Samuel 15:6. Actually, if you pick up in verse 1, so here this is interesting because the Amalekites are coming back into the story, Right? So this is the confrontation of Saul with the Amalekites. 1 Samuel 15, verse 1. Then Samuel said to Saul, The Lord sent me to anoint you as king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore, listen to the words of the Lord. Thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he set himself against him on the way while he was coming up from Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek and utterly destroy all that he has, and do not spare him, but put to death both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey. And so, if you remember from Exodus 17, this is what God said he was going to do to the Amalekites, right, for them ambushing the Israelites. Verse 4. Then Saul summoned the people and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and set an ambush in the valley. Verse 6. And Saul said to the Kenites, who are the descendants of Jethro, right, Moses' father-in-law, go, depart, go down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them, for you showed kindness to all the sons of Israel when they came up from Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. So Saul defeated the Amalekites from Havilah as you go to Shur, which is east of Egypt. Okay, so even all the way up to the book of 1 Samuel, as the Israelites are still making war on the Canaanites and the surrounding peoples, as God is giving, in the process of giving to the Israelites the land that he had promised to Abraham, he's still set on utterly destroying the Amalekites for what they did to the Israelites, but also blessing the Kenites, the descendants of Moses' father-in-law, for them blessing the Lord and blessing the Israelites as they were also on their way to Horeb. Okay?